Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sedatorian Congregation, Mountain Zion, the 12th Hour in the Elgin, Texas. Today is January 17, 2023, or it is Shevet 26, 2026. We're going to start our first service today with a song and then with a prayer, and then we're going to go right on into our service. Okay, our service is taken from Living Symbolic Code number 12, and the title of it is A Kingdom Locked in Under 10 Virgins. We've had this before, not long ago, but this is present truth today. There's some things that we need to bring up closer to the truth. We're going to forego the prayer thought, get right on into the sermon. Okay, it says Matthew 24:42-43. Watch therefore, for you know not what hour your master Yeshua doth come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched, and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. For these verses convey the idea that no one knows the day and the hour of the Yeshua's coming. And therefore, the Yeshua admonishes his people to be ready all the time. Then he draws the illustration that if a certain one knew that a thief would attempt to break into his house at a certain time, he would certainly watch for him. Really, the fact is that no one knows exactly when a thief will enter. Matthew 24:44-45. Therefore, be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master hath made ruler over his household to give them meat in the due season? We know that when William Miller came on the scene in 1844 with his people, he was the third movement from coming out of Egypt. Moses had the first movement, 1500 B.C. Yeshua hooked on to that with the second movement at the cross, 1500 years later. These are all found in Matthew 20, verses 1 through 6, these five movements, in consecutive order. And we know that William Miller had the third movement, 1833, as in Matthew 20, verse 5, called at the sixth hour. And we know that that movement hooked on to the fourth movement of Ellen G. White, for the 2300 days, because William Miller, he delivered the message, the 2300 day prophecy, to Ellen G. White and the Little Advent Band in 1844. And that's also found at the ninth parabolic hour. And that's also found in Matthew 20, verse 5, where it says, the third and ninth hour call. William Miller and Ellen G. White had the third and ninth hour call there in Matthew 20, verse 5. So, we're talking about servants that are called, and if they know what their message is, and they've been called to a post to fill, prophetic post, and they know what their message is, Yeshua gives them a message, then they know who they are, they know what their message is, they know what it means, and they know how to teach it right. That's called a servant being called and given meat in due season to give to the members of his congregation. And so he gets that meat in due season from heaven. He gets it from Yeshua indirectly. And so therefore he knows what's going on. That's where we're at today. So it says, Matthew 24:44-45, therefore, be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not the Son of Man cometh. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his master hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season? So the question is asked, who then? So there must be two people there at that time that yes, sure come to choose somebody at a certain time to be a ruler over his household, to give them a message in due season. Apparently there are two people there that are working for the job. One already has the job appointed. The other was sent to assist him. And he's there to do the job, but the first one doesn't do it right. And that's what we got going on here between Verlis and Johnson. Verlis Johnson and Denton Brunken in 1970 to 2003, it's term of protection. Matthew 24:44-45. Therefore be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not the Son of Man cometh. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his master hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season? Okay, when you say that that was the case with David and Goliath and Saul, on the day that David came into camp to see how his brothers and how the army was doing, because they were being challenged by the Philistines in Goliath, and it had been for 40 days, and they only had 40 days to accept a challenge of one-on-one to see who's going to be ruler over the land of Israel. It's either going to be the Philistines or it's going to be the Israelites. But they had to choose a man to fight for each one. And David came into the camp on the very last day that they were challenged, the 40th day, and he found that there was nobody there to challenge Goliath, and his three brothers that was there in the army is going to have to go into battle that day, physical engagement. And so David says, well, what is the cause? And they tell him, he said, well, I'll go fight with him. Isn't that a good enough cause? I'll go fight with him and win this battle. And David did. So then, Yahweh proved who the true and faithful wise servant was that day. It was a little sheep herder out there herding sheep. And his father called him from the sheep herd and said, go into to the army and see how your brothers are doing. Take them something to eat. And their captains, take them something to eat. See how they're doing today. So David, he broke off and went into the camp. And he was a faithful and wise servant that Yahshua could defend on, or Yahweh could depend on that day. The little shepherd boy had already proved himself out there herding sheep. For David had already killed a bear and a lion for trying to kill his sheep. He intervened and killed a bear and a lion and defended his sheep out there. So why couldn't he defend Israel against one man? Well, there was no difference. That's where we're at today. Yahshua came to Gilead Center in 1970, and he hired Brother Cedric Johnson because he was the next one in line to inherit the birthright to be ruler over his people Israel. And he sent me along to join him. And I was there for 33 total years learning my lesson. Yahshua come and 33 years later, and he's going to see which of the two servants was doing his will. And he found that Verlis Johnson was not doing his will, so he tested him. And the rest is history. He cut him loose and put me in his place. Okay. Who then is a faithful and wise servant? That's the question. For this implies that there are certain conditions which must be met by those who would be called faithful and wise servants. So, now, in order for you to be one of those called faithful, you have to be preordained. And you have to be called by the Spirit and raised up by the Spirit. And then you have to be tested and tried to see how you handle present truth and inspiration when it's revealed to you. It says, they must be given meat in the due season. So whoever this implies, that there are certain conditions which must be met by those who would be called faithful and wise servants, must be given a meat in the due season. Well, Brother Johnson was already there and sitting upon his throne, and he was given meat in due season unto his flock. But the creation calendar, with all that he had. And I know he did that real hard for 7 years, from 70 to 77. I know he really worked at giving as much truth as he could, was given to him as he could come up with. He was given meat in due season and passing it on. Okay, Matthew 24:46. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Said, blessed is that servant. We as a denomination, as a Seventh-day Adventist, should be able to reason out the lesson that is in these verses. According unto the verse 45, the Yeshua has made someone ruler over his household. Okay, he has made someone ruler who would that be in the Yahweh's church and the denomination. If we are to attach this to someone, it would necessarily be attached unto the president of the General Conference, who heads all the work. And since his responsibility is for the spreading throughout all the Adventist churches, ensured by the ministry whom he directs, it follows that they all are included in what Yeshua is saying here. That is the only thing that it could mean. Matthew 24:45. Who then is a faithful and wise servant? The question is asked again. Whom his master, Yeshua, hath made ruler over his household to give them meat in due season. Well, we know the General Conference has rejected Yeshua. Today, they say that he is the lone God in the flesh, that there is no Father and Son and Holy Spirit as such. They're all molded into one person, and Jesus Christ, they say, is one of these people molded with God the Father, and the Holy Spirit is another person. So they said, they got three persons molded there. So when you're talking about a faithful one giving meat in due season, well, you can't come to the Trinity that the Catholic Church has molded and put together for the Adventist to now adopt in the place of the three angels' messages and the teachings that there's a Father and he has a Son, and a, and they both are guided by the Spirit of the Father. You can't find none of that in the teachings in the Adventist Church. That's what it's all about, and that's what the whole controversy is all about. So when Yeshua comes, he says, is there anybody that teaches the true concept of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit? And in essence, he's saying, I have found no man in the Adventist Church, and he hasn't. Every time he comes to check, the Seventh-day Adventist, the General Conference, he can't find no man teaching that concept. They're teaching the Catholic concept that does away with the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit as being three separate entities, the Father, the Son being persons, and the Holy Spirit being a spiritual entity, they've done away with that concept. Who then is a faithful, Matthew 24:45, who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his master hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season? So you're asking the question, who then is? When I come, I didn't find any among the general conference leadership that's taken over the Adventist church. I never found any there. So who then? Where do I go? Because this is, when I last came, I appointed somebody over that candlestick of Laodicea. That was Brother Johnson in 1970. The time Brother Johnson's time was up in 2002-2003, he didn't know who he was and what he was appointed to and what his message was. He lost it all. So Yahshua comes and he said, well, I've got a debt in Brunken there that I sent there 33 years ago. I wonder if he would deliver my message. And sure enough, he would. That's why we're sitting here preaching it today. Should not meet in a due season be a message from the Yahweh especially addressed unto his people and applicable at that time? Another name for meat in the due season is present truth. Okay? So present truth, Sister White says, what the people need all the time. Every day they need present truth on a daily basis. So then, the servant is to give his household present truth. Matthew 24:46. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. But why does Yahshua say that? Because he knows the Holy Spirit has been sent by the Father to that servant, and that Holy Spirit gives him his message every day. Yahshua knows that the Holy Spirit is doing his work from the Father. It's a courier. It's a carrier of good news, of salvation for the human race on a daily basis around the world to everybody that prays for it, that wants it. This is that servant whom his master Yahshua, when he cometh, shall find so doing. If my application is now right, that this is speaking unto the Seventh-day Adventist denomination, this power unto Yahshua's coming, then we must understand that the Yahweh wants his servant to give unto his household meat in due season until he comes. So he's wanting them to give whoever in charge of his house to give them present truth on a daily basis. Well, then they have to be hooked into the Holy Spirit on a 24-hour basis, because the Holy Spirit's on time with a timely message every day. It's the servants that has to be on time and wake up and have their eyes awake and be ready to receive these messages from heaven. Matthew 24:47. Verily, I say unto you, that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. This verse implies that God, that the Yahweh, has not as yet made his servant ruler over all his goods. Well, whenever he does, it means that it's time for it. And that servant is prepared in his heart by his faithfulness to deliver present truth on a daily basis ahead of time. Then he has proved himself that he's capable and he will do it from then on. But when he proves true by attending to his business, faithfully giving to his household meat in the due season on a daily basis until the Yeshua comes, then Yahweh the Father is going to make him ruler over all his goods. That is the promise. But that should read, then Yeshua the Son is going to make him ruler over all his goods. That is the promise, because Yeshua the Son has inherited this earth. By his blood sacrifice on the cross, he inherited this earth from his Father. And so, Yeshua owns it all now. Matthew 24:48-50. But and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servant, and to eat and drink with the drunken, Yeshua of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of. If no one is to know the day and the hour until the Yeshua comes, then how could the servant be aware of the day and the hour? Do you see that one statement seems to contradict the other? No one knows the hour or the day, therefore Yahweh, apparently they're saying Yahweh the Father, people, must be ready for the event to occur at almost any time. And if this servant does not faithfully perform his duties, then when Yahshua is about to come, that servant will not be aware of it. Is that not how you understand these two statements? Up unto a certain time, Yahweh's people do not know the day and the hour. Verily, if they continue by the receiving of the meat in the due season, a day will come when this servant is going to be made aware of that hour, of that day. For this illustration was not given unto us alone, but unto all of Yahweh's people, ever since it was written. And they were warned to be ready all the time, because no one knew the day and the hour of his coming. It should say that no one knows the day and the hour of his coming. But as the truth progresses and the word of Yahweh unrolls, Yahweh's servants, it should read Yahshua the Son's servants, and that in the end are to be aware of the day and the hour. Does it not say that? That is just what it does say. But what is the danger here? What caused the servant to begin to eat and drink with the drunken? They said, the Yahshua delayeth his coming. There were only two occasions in all the church's history that man complained that the Yahshua delayed his coming. They were the first early apostolics who had expected Yahshua to come immediately, for they thought surely it would not be very long before the Yahshua would come. In the like manner, as he had gone up, but lo, almost 2,000 years have passed since the promises given, and the Yahshua has not come yet. So there was a massive or a chance for the earlier believers to complain that the Yahshua had delayed his coming. But we are not dealing with the disappointment at the commencement the apostolic era, a church, temple, whether we are speaking at a time when the Yahshua is ready to come a second time, and the time of the end. I added that second time because V.T. Hall has left a hyphen there to put something in there, so I put that second time in there. You know that there was a people on this end of the Yahshua's history who also expected Yahshua to come long before now. I suppose you would say they were the Millerites, but to this I cannot agree, because there were no delays for them. They had set the date for the Yahshua's coming, and the outcome for them was not a delay, but a bitter disappointment. For the Seventh-day Adventists, though, since 1844, believed that in their lifetime, in their generation, that the Yahshua would come and take them to home, or to heaven. You that have been Seventh-day Adventists for a long time, or even for a short time, know that it was their expectations. Instead, however, many of them are in their graves today. In the early days, our churches used to have a sign hanging inside reading thus, "The gospel preached to all the world in this generation." Those signs have long since been taken down. 100 years ago, everybody who knew Adventists knew what were our expectations. But it is not the case today. I can also recall that after I became a Seventh-day Adventist, I heard the brethren say that the Yahshua will come almost momentarily. But the Yahshua has not come. But the Yahshua has not come yet. For they erroneously concluded that the Yahshua would come in a few years. But it was to their detriment, for when the time passed, they became truth. We see then that according to our early expectations, as Adventists, the Yahshua apparently has delayed his coming. And inasmuch as no other people in all of the Christian world ever expected the Yahshua to come as the Adventists did, then this lesson is applicable only unto us. Moreover, when at the first Yahweh's people expected the Yahshua to come soon, they all seemed to conform unto the diet regulation, which were given unto the church to keep them apart from the world. So when the Yahweh's people thought that the Yahshua had delayed his coming, what did they do? The majority laid aside their adverse habits of eating and living. They seem not to have understood that their prescribed mode of the living, as the Yahweh had enjoined upon them, was not limited unto any certain time, but it was to be binding upon them until the Yahshua come. What will the Yahshua do about those who became truth because they thought the Yahshua delayed his coming? Let us read Matthew 24:48-51. "But and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, My master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunken, yes, surely their service shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and upon him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of the teeth. What a terrible disappointment it will be, and unto the people that for a time waited for the Yeshua's coming, once lined up with his program, and then departed from it. Unto these the Yeshua comes when they are not expecting him. Matthew 25:1. Then shall the kingdom of the heaven be likened unto 10 virgins, which took their lamps and went forth for the meeting of the bridegroom. This verse begins with the word then, indicating that it takes place at the time that the Yeshua comes, as spoken of in the preceding verse. In other words, at the time that the Yeshua comes, the kingdom shall be likened unto something. For the kingdom of Yahweh as a crowned kingdom does not exist today, as you know. And what is meant here by the kingdom, it is referring unto the people that are candidates for the citizenship in it, who are the subjects for the kingdom of the Yahweh, if they are not the members of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Then the people comprising the Seventh-day Adventist Church of Yahweh shall be likened unto 10 virgins. Matthew 25:2-5. And 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps, and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels, with their lamps, while the bridegroom tarried. They all slumbered and slept. When this happens, the church is likened unto 10 virgins, and the ones that were foolish had their lamps all right, but they did not take with them more oil than what was in the lamps. They therefore had no extra reserve of the oil. What does oil stand for? Question. When used in a lamp, for it gives light which illuminates your way, does it not? And the spiritual realm, it is the understanding of the prophecies of the Bible that alone causes you to know where you are going. Only 5 of the virgins have extra oil. They had availed themselves of the extra oil so that they could refill their lamps in the case that the oil that was in them should be used before they reached their destination. For the light that came in 1844 for the lightning of the path forward was the truth of the judgment of the dead, which began then. Those that received this light called themselves Seventh-day Adventists from that time on. And the words used in this parable, they filled their lamps with the oil that represented the judgment of the dead's message. Then came the tarrying time. For it is true that the Millerites expected the Yahshua to come onto the earth for the saints on a certain date in 1844, and he did not appear. For they concluded, therefore, that they must have made a mistake, and they were no longer known by a name. It was the Seventh-day Adventists that expected the Yeshua to come, not only on a certain day, but in a generation, in a certain period of time. Since he did not come, however, they therefore concluded that the Yeshua delayed his coming. Well, that's what Brother Stephen Johnson did. He certainly taught Yeshua that I should come in the person in 1970. had come to him, actually he said in 1968, and gave him the message to take and go and encamp on a river up in the mountains there in Arkansas for 3 months, take him, his wife, and maybe even his mother-in-law, and go out there and live there, and he will give him the information on how to put Creation Challenger together, and that he would go with him. So Brother Johnson taught the second coming of Yahshua to him 2 years before 1970 and 1968, and gave him personally Creation Challenger to bring forth. And then he gave him a message that says, teach my people my government with this Creation Challenger. And then at the Passover, when he said Yahshua was coming, going to be here. Then after 1968, when Brother Johnson had that first connection with Yahshua, Yahshua gave him a message and gave him a commission to put that calendar together. Well, in 2002, 34 years later, and I was with him 32 years of that, he said, well, Yahshua is going to come tonight at the Passover of 2002. But he preached that for a year before 2002. Started preaching that in 2001. He said an atypical year for his second coming to us would be in 2002 at the Passover. Well, when Yahshua didn't come, Brother Johnson got in the pulpit. He said, well, folks, this wasn't the year after all that we thought it was going to be. So what was he saying? The Master delayeth his coming, fulfilling what I just read you here. Okay, Matthew 25:5-6. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him. The cry to meet the bridegroom comes after the time of the tarrying. Matthew 25:7-12. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. But the wise answered, saying, not so, lest there be not enough for us and you, but go ye rather unto them that sell, and buy for yourself. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him unto the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterwards came also the other virgin, saying, Master, Master, open unto us. But he answered and said, verily I say unto you, I know you not. An announcement is made that the bridegroom cometh. All the virgins are awakened by it. If the announcement were to come from the general conference, you know that all the members would fill their vessels with the oil that the general conference would have at that time to feed them. And all would have it. And then all the members with the Adventist church would accept it. And they would go forward with it and say, oh, this is the truth that's going to take us now into heaven. So they go forth believing that, even though they would end up with a disappointment for sure, but they would still do it. For the facts are, though, that the cry does not come from there. All trim their lamps, we are told. What is the implication in that? We may conclude that while the cry goes out, the people trim their lamps with the oil that is in them. In other words, they begin to apply their message unto the change in the circumstances or events. But what happened? The lamps go out. That indicates that what we had expected to happen does not happen. Instead, something else takes place. For the Seventh-day Adventists are expecting the war of the Armageddon to take place next. When they see something different come instead, they will become confused. They will then realize that the oil in their lamps, the judgment of the dead message, is not sufficient for the guiding them through the situation. And they will long for the extra oil, the additional light, as a message of the judgment for the living that had previously been available unto them, but they had failed for the obtaining of it, of that message. Thus feeling their urgent need for that message, they will demand it from those who have it. But it will be too late by the time they arrive at the bridegroom's chamber. They find that he had already entered and closed the door. For they knock, they plead, thinking he will surely open the door and welcome them inside. But instead, what do they hear him say? "Verily I say unto you, I know ye not," and the door remains shut. Probation has closed for them forever. And let us now identify the different personalities brought in. Here is a bridegroom. But where is the bride? And here are the virgins. The cry was, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh." This cry was not to the bride, but to the virgin. For the virgins can only represent the guest. Okay, who is the bride? Now, Richie Hollis, he don't know who the bride is. And the seventh angels don't know who the bride is. So Vitihal is going to attempt to quote somebody else in some other source, and I don't agree with it. And I'm going to read it to you. Now Vitihal is saying, "The virgins can only represent the guests," which I, and that's the members, the laity. "Who is the bride?" And now he asked that question. Well, let us turn to Revelation 21 for help in identifying who is the bride. So now he goes to and quotes Revelation 21, verse 9 and 10. "And there came unto me one of the seven angels which had the seven vials full of the seven last plagues, and talked with me, saying, Come up hither, I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. And he carried me away in the spirit unto a great and high mountain, and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from the Yahweh." So he's saying here, for the Lamb's wife is the city. And John saw the foundations and the walls and the buildings of the holy city. He did not see people. He called the city the Lamb's wife. If the city is the Lamb's wife, and if the virgins are the ones who are to meet the bridegroom, then who is the bride? For the kingdom must be the kingdom. So it'll be the everlasting kingdom of David, as pointed out by that little stone that's hewn out of the mouth out of hands in Daniel 2:44 and 45. Must be the bride, because that's where the 144,000 are harvested into. This particular kingdom that I just told you about, which is called the kingdom of heaven, Daniel 2:44 and 2:45, that sit up here in the 12th periodic hour with the kingdom of David. Okay, here and that gathers the 144,000, and we know that the 144,000, becomes the bride's lamb. I mean, the lamb's bride whenever he comes to harvest them, because he's the one that harvests the 144,000. And they're the ones that represents the five wise virgins in this parable. We're just reading about in Matthew 25, of the five wise virgins. They're the wise ones. But who are the five foolish virgins in this parable? They're the terrors that were separated from the wise ones there in Ezekiel 9. By that marking angel Yahshua with the white linen on. It says, oh, the white linen. Well, he was dressed in the bridegroom when he did the marking and sealing there in Ezekiel 9. Yahshua was the one that did it. And he was dressed in white linen, and the linen, that's what the bridegroom wears to the marriage feast. This white linen. That's, and he's the one that did the marking. And he marked those that were to be guests and those that were to be his bride. Okay. But at the same time, for the same thing is true in this parable, as we find in the parable of the king going in for the examining of his guests for the marriage, one of whom he found without the wedding garment on. Those whom he examined are the guests. To summarize then, the people are the guests. The kingdom made up of the first harvest, fruits harvest of the 144,000, now the Adventist church, standing with the Lamb upon Mount Zion, standing there in Revelation 14:1, is the bride. That when Yahshua comes to this earth to make up his kingdom, he calls that his bride, the 144,000. And Yahshua is the groom. Moreover, in the parable we are studying today, did the Yahshua come onto the earth where the 10 virgins were? Yes, he did. For he came where both the unworthy and the worthy virgins were. If he came onto the earth and had a door of his own to shut or to open, that would indicate that he had a place of his own. Then he will come into his own kingdom. And unless the guests enter on the time through the door of this kingdom, when he comes and he sets it up and he calls for them, they would be disappointed when they knock and the door will not be open unto them. Since this coming of the bridegroom is obviously not the visible second coming of the Yahshua, and this is where B.T. Hallett is wrong. He's making a comment here. He don't have any Bible proof for it, but this is where the prophet goes off on his own again. They all did it. B.T. Hallett is a true prophet, but all the prophets before him, talking about those Reformed prophets, starting with Martin Luther in 1500, that come out of the Catholic Church, those Reformed prophets, Protestant Reformed prophets, which were Reform Movement prophets. They were Martin Luther, John Knox, John Wesley the Methodist, 1725, John Knox the Holy Spirit Presbyterian, 1543, Martin Luther, 1500 with the Lutheran Church, and Alexander Campbell, the Baptist Church, 1810, and William Miller, the 2300-year prophecy, 1833 to 1844, and Ellen G. White, 1844. On. This coming, and so, now he's taking it on himself to say, since this coming of the bridegroom is obviously not the visible second coming of the Yahshua, well, it is a visible second coming unto those that he comes to and sits up his everlasting kingdom with the bride. It is a visible coming. Elsewhere would the bride know where to go and literally go where to go and have this wedding feast? If they didn't have the bridegroom coming here in person and calling them and separating them from the five foolish and I'll read again, since this term of bridegroom is obviously, and I'm gonna change that negative to the positive, is the visible second coming of the Asura for the taking, for his marriage here on earth, for the preparation of taking his people to heaven, who shall meet him in the air. We should be able to find in the Bible something more about it. Let us now turn to Matthew 25:31-32. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. Did these verses say that the Son of Man is going to come down on a cloud where the just risen dead along with the living saints will meet him in the air, as in the 1 Thessalonians 4:16-17? Is that not what we just read? No. It says here, he will gather all nations before him. He will sit down on a throne and separate them. But he will put the goats on the left and the sheep on the right. Moreover, he will tell each of the two classes what they have or have not done that causes them to be thus just and separated. Do you not see clearly why we need the extra oil as a message of the judgment for the living? Now, that's what was given to Brother Johnson when they asked me on July 14, 2002, what do you think is causing us to lose all of our blessings? The leadership here with the prophet and Mary, the wife asked. Well, when I finally got around to answering the question a second time, I said, I didn't have an opinion, but I have a message from heaven, and here's the message. And Willis Johnson agreed to listen to the message. He said, I want to hear it now. And I gave it to him, and he and his wife both rejected it. We, as Adventists, have been preaching the judgment for 100 years or more, and yet never even for a moment did we see that these parables were talking about the judgment for the living. If we never saw it before, we should now be able to see clearly that this judgment included the separation of the righteous and the wicked. So there's your Ezekiel 9, and there's your separating this 144,000 from the tares are in Matthew 13. We cannot say that the judgment we are reading about in the Matthew 25 is the judgment that is to take place during the millennium, because his people are not then among the nations. There is positively no escaping of the conclusion that it takes place in the time of the judgment for the living, when both the righteous and the wicked are commingled on the earth. Well, the judgment of the living takes place in the 12th parabolic hour. That's that pure and simple. If they know when these parabolic hours open and end, they're in Matthew 20, verses 1 through 6, and it talks about those five parabolic hours where five groups of laborers are called at five different times to head up five different movements and five different revival and reformations. If they understand the timetable for those five calls, then they would know. The last call, people would know exactly who they are and where they are in the stream of time and everything that's to take place from day to day. Since, moreover, this work of the separation goes on among the people themselves, it is clear that it is not a work to be done in the heaven, but it is a work to be done on the earth. Then shall two be in the field, one shall be taken, and the other left. Two women shall be grinding at the mill, one shall be taken and the other left. Matthew 24:40-41. Some call that the rapture, but it is quite different than what they think it is. Now we plainly see that the Yeshua in Matthew 25 is talking about the judgment for the living, and the 12th hour that we're in since 2002, starting at the Passover at Gilead Center, is when the 11th hour Adventist closed out with Rhoda Johnson, closed out the judgment of the dead, closed out the sixth seal, closed out the three angels' messages, because the three angels' messages would only be to be given sparingly to a few nations after 1844, and then with a loud cry only to the Adventist Church until the fourth and fifth angel joins it, and the 12th parabolic hour. The three angels' message is only to be given in the 10th and the 11th parabolic hour. The five angels that are to join up all together, concluding with Revelation 18:1, angel come out of her, my people, that she be not partakers of her sins, receive not of her plagues, calling Yahweh's people out of Babylon, that last angel is called, that had joined up with the first three angels, and the 12th parabolic hour. Now we finally see that Yahshua in the Matthew 25 is talking about the judgment for the living, and in the connection with this subject, we find that the Malachi says the very same thing, namely, that after a messenger has prepared the way, in Malachi 3, verse 1, Yeshua will suddenly come to his temple for the purify it, Matthew 3, 1. When he comes, it is not to judge the dead in the heavenly sanctuary, but to judge the living in the earthly sanctuary. That's why he comes this earth. It's time to judge the living. So he judges the living in heaven. When the judgment of the dead is over in heaven, then he comes down to the earth to judge the living. Now that took place in 2002. It's confrontation. Took a whole year from Passover of 2002 to the second Passover of 2003, which covered a 13-month period at that time. And if the Yeshua is going to sit on his throne on the earth and gather the nations before him and judge and separate the people, where specifically is the Yeshua going to sit? In Daniel 2, we find the description and the interpretation of the great image which the king of Babylon saw in a dream. We as the Adventists, and for that matter, not only we Adventists, but other Bible students as well, recognize that this image represents the nations of the world from the Babylon's time down unto our day. We also understand that the toe kingdoms represents the nations and the existence today. Now let us read Daniel 2:44-45. And in the days of these kings, that's in the ten toe kings, shall the Yahweh of the heavens set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left under the other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all of these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without the hand, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great Yahweh has made known unto the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Daniel here describes how the earth's governments come to their end not how the earth comes to its end. For he interpreted the little stone to be the kingdom, which is the everlasting kingdom of David. And it is Yahshua's kingdom. I changed that, they said God's kingdom. Well, it may be the Father and the Son work together on creating and sharing this kingdom. But I do know that we have a prophecy in Isaiah 9:6-8 that says that Yahshua is this child that was born and a son was given unto the house of Judah for the sole purpose of being a throne place for this everlasting kingdom of heaven that is set up here with this prophecy of Daniel 2:44-45 that we are reading now. For it is Yahshua's kingdom, the Son, that will smite the nation, not the Yahshua coming from heaven to take up the saints, as we Adventists have taught. Jeremiah calls the kingdom Yahweh's battle axe, Jeremiah 1:51-20. Well, you see, what the Adventist prophets don't understand today, that Yahshua comes ahead, and he prepares a place to bring his saints to here on earth. Now, that's in Zechariah 14, 1 through 5. He describes it all. First Yahshua comes, his feet stands in that mountain on the Mount of Olives. It splits asunder, part of it toward the north and part of it toward the south. There becomes a very great valley. And in verse 5 says, Yahshua then comes to that valley of the mountain, and he brings all the saints with thee. And who is this thee? This is the crowned kings of the 144,000 of the house of David. Yahshua is coming with all of that and bringing those Gentile converts that they have gathered to that valley of the mountain. Then you're going to have a lot of things take place after that happened. So Yahshua has come and picked up his saints from all around the world. He prepared a place here on earth to bring them to. And he prepared that place right there in the land of Israel. It says so in Zechariah 14. This may be closed by step. This is our contact. Just the 11th hour calling. It's number 11. Click on the audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. The solid rock. My hope is built on nothing less than Yahshua's blood and righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest breath, but wholly lean on Yahshua's name. On Yahshua the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. All other ground is sinking sand. And darkness fails his lovely face, I rest on his unchanging grace. And every high and stormy gale, my anchor holds within the veil. Only Yahshua the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. All other ground is sinking sand. Please know this heaven at his blood, support me in the whelming flood. And all around my soul gives way, he then is all my hope and stay. And Yahshua the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. All other ground is sinking sand. And
come with Chapisa, O Mayadin, and Bita. Christian is righteousness alone, fruitless to stand before the throne. On Yashir's altar, Yashir, all of the ground is sinking sand.